This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. today on Jay Sekulow Live. As the impeachment trial draws to a close, the Senate debates whether or not to call additional witnesses.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The framers did not mean that this political process was to be a partisan process. Instead, they meant it to be political in the higher sense. The process was to be conducted in the way that would best secure the public interest, or in their phrase, the general welfare.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
There are some in this room that are days away from the Iowa caucuses taking place. So we're discussing the possible impeachment and removal of the President of the United States, not only during election season, in the heart of the election season. And I think that this does a disservice to the American people.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome into Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. I am Than Bennett, coming to you from Washington, D.C. And folks, it looks like we have finally reached the end of this process. We've got a long day ahead of us before that will wrap up, but it looks like this may be the final day of the Senate impeachment trial. We told you yesterday, after the Senate finished up its 16 hours of questioning, that all eyes would turn toward the debate on whether or not to call additional witnesses. And sure enough, as soon as the senators started filing out of the chamber last night, it was a little before 11 o'clock, undecided senators started to make their statements about how they would vote on whether or not to call additional witnesses. Remember, there were already 17 public witnesses in the House, all of them called by the House managers led by Chairman Schiff. But as they started filing out of the chamber, they started making their statements. And we told you yesterday that Democrats would be looking for statements from up to, they needed four Republicans to vote with them in order to extend this trial. And we told you yesterday that Senator Romney and Senator Collins were likely to vote with Democrats. They have now confirmed that. They will vote to call additional witnesses and extend the trial. We also told you that Senator Gardner and Senator McSally, two other Republican senators that Democrats had targeted, were likely voting no. That is still the case. So that sort of left two Republicans that Democrats had to get in order to extend this trial. It was Senator Alexander of Tennessee and Senator Murkowski of Alaska. Senator Alexander has now decided through a statement that he has seen enough. He has seen enough evidence. He will vote no on extending the trial. He will not join Democrats. Now, we don't yet know a decision from Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, but folks, it really doesn't matter. Even if she's a yes, the Democrats will fall short of the votes that they need to again reopen the trial to witnesses, to calling witnesses that Chairman Schiff and the others in the House did not call. So folks, as long as all of that stays, and these are pretty public statement, so I suspect that it will. Later on today, we will start to move to a close. Now, I'll warn you, it's going to take a little bit of time. That vote is likely not going to happen until the dinner hour, because the Senate has to debate for 4 hours, starting at 1 o'clock when they come in, just about an hour from now. And then we'll be in a parliamentary posture that allows Democrats to amend the eventual motion that Leader McConnell will put forward. So if they vote not to allow witnesses, they will be moving towards a final vote, but that'll be debatable. If you think back to the organizing resolution on the first day of this trial, remember how Leader Schumer introduced 11 different amendments, debated them all for a couple of hours, and ultimately all of them got voted down? We would be in a similar posture. So there's a lot of variables on the timing here, folks. There's a saying in Washington, D.C. that the Senate operates by either exhaustion or consent. And I think that's where we'll be tonight. It looks like we know where the outcome will go, but we don't know how long it will take. I will tell you this, though. There's going to be an interesting dynamic, because if Leader Schumer's trying to extend this out, two of the people who are going to be most in his ear likely to ask him to draw it to a close now that the conclusion is inevitable, Senator Warren and Senator Klobuchar, who are 3 days away from participating in the Iowa caucus. They're going to be desperate to get out of the chamber, especially with the conclusion pretty much wrapped in. There's a lot still moving, folks, but that's where we're at. Today, when they come in, 4 hours of debate, then this very important vote on whether or not to call additional witnesses. We're going to play a lot of sound for you from Jay on the floor of the Senate yesterday. We're also going to talk to you about some of the Democrats who I think in the end are going to vote to exonerate the president. Don't necessarily need their votes. In fact, they're not going to need their votes. But I think this is going to be a bipartisan exoneration. And I think it will happen on this session day, but probably after midnight. We'll be back after this on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I'm going to explain something to you very quickly here. I said before the break that the Senate operates by either exhaustion or consent. And there is a report that is circulating, it's been circulating really since late last night, that there might be a discussion in the United States Senate of coming to some sort of consent agreement to actually hold the vote on the final article sometime next week, maybe even after the State of the Union. And that's certainly in play, folks. Here's essentially what is going to happen. After we get to this vote around the dinner hour on whether or not to call additional witnesses, we will know whether or not this trial is drawing to a close. And at that point, there's really a couple of different strategies that Leader McConnell could choose to take. If he goes with the strategy that he used when this trial opened and that they were debating this organizing resolution where it was open-ended, he would essentially say to Leader Schumer, exhaust yourself. We're here as long as you want to be here, as long as your caucus will allow you to be here, and until they decide that the conclusion is inevitable and they want to vote to bring this to a close. I think that pressure would probably come from Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, most specifically, because they want to get to Iowa. The other thing that they could do, though, is try to get a consent agreement so that they did not have to debate through the night or however long Leader Schumer dragged it out. And it is theoretically possible that the two sides would agree by unanimous consent to hold a final vote at a very specific time. They could say, I'm literally just picking this out of the air, but they could say Wednesday at 10 o'clock after the State of the Union, after Iowa, we will hold the final vote on articles. That is another way they could get out of that endless loop of amendments. So that report's out there. If you saw it, I wanted to explain those two possibilities to you. I do think that both of them are likely, but if history from 2 weeks ago is any indication, I think Leader McConnell's first choice would be to just simply wait out Leader Schumer now that it's pretty clear where everybody stands. But we'll see. Those are the two primary scenarios that are likely. Professor Hutchison, I want to bring you into this conversation because it now does appear like the trial is wrapping up and we're going to play some of this sound. But I thought probably the convincing thing to some of these senators on the fence was that dialogue between Jay and Chairman Schiff on the floor, where Chairman Schiff admitted that he thinks that they've proven their case. And so Jay asked the senators, well, if they think they've proven their case, why don't we just go to a vote? We don't need to call more witnesses. To me, Harry, I thought that was when we knew this trial was going to come to an end here pretty quickly.
I think that's correct. And I also think Democrats are prepared to concede it, even if they are unprepared to concede it publicly. It's important to note that the Democrats have consistently overpromised and underdelivered. They have consistently overplayed their hand. And while They loudly proclaim their commitment to fairness. They love to engage in processes that are contrary to the rule of law, the Constitution, and elementary due process. So in a nutshell, that, I think, is why their impeachment case, their impeachment narrative, is cratering at the seams, and apparently they know it. And I think it can be capsulized in terms of the closing by Jerry Nadler, who essentially accused the senators of being juveniles. And I would say to Mr. Nadler, that is not a smart strategy. I would argue that instead of being juvenile, Mr. Nadler, that is being infantile.
Yeah, it was also interesting. It was clear that Chairman Schiff or Manager Schiff had intended to close those proceedings, Harry. He got up to give the final answer, and Manager Nadler actually hustled past him to get to the podium ahead. So there was clearly a little bit of tension. There's been tension between the two of them from the very beginning when Chairman Nadler kind of got removed from the case, even though the chairman of the Judiciary Committee would have typically had that role. So that was an interesting dynamic yesterday. But folks, all this week and last week, we've been playing sound for you from the Senate floor, so you would hear directly the arguments that are being made on behalf of the president and on behalf of the managers to the United States Senate. You know, Harry and I certainly want to give you our thoughts, but we wanted you to hear the evidence directly, and I want to do that again today. This is a bite. It's kind of a long back and forth, but there's this exchange about the Biden rule, and this was how Joe Biden, back during the Bill Clinton proceedings, did not think there was a need for additional witnesses, and Jay makes the case that he thinks the Biden rule should apply, and he responds to Manager Schiff's argument that you can't wait out the court process, and he explains, look, I've been before the Supreme Court. I always have to wait out the lower court process. That is how it works in the United States of America. So again, this is from the floor of the Senate yesterday, Jay Sekulow responding to a question about the Biden rule.
In January 1999, then-Senator Joe Biden argued strongly against deposing additional witnesses or seeking new evidence in a memo sent to fellow Democrats ahead of Bill Clinton's impeachment trial, end quote. Politico reports that Senator Schumer agreed with Biden. Why should the Biden rule not apply here?
In a memorandum dated January 5, 1999, that is captioned Arguments in Support of Summary Impeachment Trial, Senator Biden discussed some history first regarding two Senate impeachment proceedings that were put forward in the Senate that were summarily decided. And this is what he said. These two cases demonstrate that the Senate may dismiss articles of impeachment without holding a full trial or taking any evidence. Put another way, the Constitution does not impose on the Senate the duty to hold a trial. In fact, the Senate need not hold a trial even though the House wishes to present evidence and hold a full trial and the elements of jurisdiction are present. He went on to say, in a number of previous impeachment trials, the Senate has reached the judgment that its constitutional role as sole trier of impeachment does not require it to take new evidence or hear live witness testimony. This follows from the Senate's considerations for motions for summary disposition in at least three trials, and it listed the three trials of Judges Ritter, Claiborne, and Nixon. In each, the Senate considered a motion for summary disposition on the merits. In no case did the Senate decline to consider a motion for summary disposition as beyond the Senate's authority or forbidden by the Constitution. The framers did not mean that this political process was to be a partisan process. Instead, they meant it to be political in the higher sense. The process was to be conducted in the way that would best secure the public interest, or in their phrase, the general welfare. That was the Biden doctrine of impeachment proceedings. Now, some members in this chamber agreed with that. Some members that serve on the as managers also agreed with that. But now the rules are different. The rules are different because Manager Schiff just moments ago did what he's now famous for and created a conversation purportedly from the President of the United States regarding Russia hacking of Burisma. And it's the same thing he did when he started his hearings. So this is a common practice. But if we want to look at common practice and common procedures, the Biden rule is one. I'd like to address something else, because we've heard it time and time again about two judges have decided this issue of executive privilege. I want to address two things very quickly. My very first case at the Supreme Court of the United States, and it was a long time ago, over 33 years ago. My client lost in the district court. They said, well, we'll appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, was not so successful. We didn't win there either. My client said, well, what do we do? I said, well, we have one option. We could file a petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court of the United States. Chances are they're not going to take the case. But at this point, it's an important issue to you, so why don't we proceed? My client agreed to proceed. A petition for certiorari was granted, and the court reversed 9-0 the Court of Appeals and the District Court. And that's why you continue to utilize courts when appropriate. That's why you do it. And you don't rely on what a district court judge says. And the last thing I want to say, they are asking you, as a Senate body, to waive executive privilege on the President of the United States. Now, I want to think about that for a moment. They are asking you to vote to determine, or have the Chief Justice in his individual capacity as presiding judge, vote to waive executive privilege as it relates to the President of the United States. And that is what they think is the appropriate role for this proceeding to continue. I think you should adopt the Biden rule.
I want to get Harry's thoughts on this after the break, but folks, that was a Supreme Court decision that Jay won 9-0 after the district court had ruled against him, and it was appealed all the way up through the appeals court to the Supreme Court. Of course, when you're talking about something as important as executive privilege or other privileges of the President of the United States, you should appeal those rights all the way till they are fully adjudicated. Of course, the United States Senate should not step in and adjudicate that rule. Of course, the House managers, if they wanted to talk to the witnesses involved, should have issued subpoenas to all of them and then try to reach accommodation or let the courts reach a final decision. I know that was a long clip, but folks, it's very important to understand that that is what the United States Senate, at least the House managers, what they are asking the United States Senate to do. And I think it's a big reason that senators have seen through it. They've seen the evidence. They know there's not a need for additional witnesses. And this trial is going to come to a close. I think it's going to end this session day. I think it'll end after midnight. So technically tomorrow, calendar day. But either way, at the longest, they're going to reach consent for a final vote on these articles. This trial, folks, it's about to end. We'll be back after this break.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., joined by Professor Harry Hutchison. And we're going to get to Nancy's call online, too, in just a minute. But quickly, I wanted to go to you, Harry, on the sound from the Senate floor that we played right before we led into that break, talking about the Biden rule and the need for new witnesses, and Jay explaining some of his Supreme Court history. He's obviously been before the Supreme Court a number of times, but he laid out particularly one case where his client had lost at each of the two lower levels. And of course, you continue to appeal to the end of the process. And it, of course, would be no different when you're talking about an issue of the magnitude of the ones we're dealing with now. So, you know, Manager Schiff can act like it's incredulous that the president would press his rights all the way through every stage of the process that he's entitled to. But Harry, any attorney who is worth his or her salt is going to make his client aware of every option they have. That's just the way we do things in the United States of America. Our day in court, Harry, it's a sacred right.
I think that is precisely correct. And I think one of the things to give Adam Schiff credit for is his unwillingness to fully understand the judicial process in the United States, his unwillingness to fully understand the United States Constitution, and his unwillingness to understand elementary due process and fairness. Essentially, Adam Schiff and the House managers have presented a massively incoherent case. And I think Jay did a fantastic job utilizing Joe Biden's statement to underscore the fact that the House of Representatives essentially have put together a house of cards, and their incoherence was exposed because on one hand they claim an overwhelming case, a case without doubt, a case compiled without compliance with elementary due process and fairness. And now, after presenting this overwhelming, urgent case, they now claim they need more witnesses in order to prove this overwhelming case and in order to expedite their case. Essentially, they are asking the President of the United States to waive his Article II powers and to waive executive privilege. This is a bargain that the president should not accept, and I was happy to see that Jay and the president's defense team refused to accept this particular offer. And it's also in line with the fact that Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler do not fully understand the Constitution. Instead, they are propelled not by the rule of law, not by the Constitution, not by fairness. They are propelled by the Trump derangement syndrome.
Well, I think the argument was duplicitous from the very beginning, when on the one hand, Chairman Schiff in his press conference said that it was so urgent to get these articles to the Senate that they could not wait for the process to finish. That's why they quit pursuing these subpoenas and the other efforts to get witnesses to testify. But then Speaker Pelosi held the articles for more than a month before sending them to the United States Senate. So both of those things could not be true simultaneously. It could not both be so urgent that they couldn't wait to let the president's rights be adjudicated, and so unurgent that the speaker could hold on to those articles before sending them over to the Senate. So I thought that conversation really exposed it. I do think it was probably a tipping point for several of these senators. And quite frankly, I don't think it's just Republicans. I think in the end, there's going to be a bipartisan exoneration here. I'm looking at Joe Manchin. I'm looking at Kyrsten Sinema, Doug Jones, maybe even a surprise or two on either the witness vote or the final vote on the underlying articles. I think at least one of those is going to be bipartisan, maybe more than one Democrat senator. We're just going to have to wait and see, but I think those votes are coming up here very soon. I want to go to Nancy, who's calling on line two from Wisconsin. I know we haven't been able to get to a lot of phone calls this week. There's been a lot to get to. Wanted you to hear direct evidence, but Nancy's calling in with a great question from Wisconsin. Nancy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. My question is, what is truly the role of Chief Justice Roberts here? I mean, he's heard everything. Does he get to make an opinion or render a judgment or tell the Democrats they're crazy?
Yeah, it's a good question, Nancy, and it's one that's been debated a lot here in Washington. The Constitution gives the Chief Justice a very specific role, but it's fairly ambiguous on how much authority he has. And different Chief Justices have asserted more or less, but none have asserted that much, quite honestly. And this has mostly come up in a discussion of if there is a vote of that ends in a 50-50 tie, including this witness vote, by the way. If Lisa Murkowski decides to vote with Democrats, that could foreseeably be a 50-50 vote. And there are some who have asked the Chief Justice to break that tie. Although I will tell you, I don't think there is a senator on either side who will in good faith tell you that they expect the Chief Justice to do that. I think they know it's probably not the most important, appropriate thing for him to do. I think they know his temperament is that he is not going to be the deciding vote. He's going to leave this to the United States Senate. And Harry, I'll go to you for your opinion, but I will just tell you for my two cents, and I haven't had this conversation with Jay, but for my two cents, I think the founders put impeachment in the hands of the elected branch for a reason. They wanted those elected officials, those senators, to have to go back to the voters, regardless of how they voted, and let the American people have the final say. I think it would be a travesty if on very important rulings, when with a closely divided Senate, you were turning to an unelected official, as prestigious as the Chief Justice is, to make that ruling. I suspect the Chief Justice agrees with me, and I don't think there's anybody in this town that really expects him to play a different role.
I think your analysis is spot on. So if you look at the Constitution, the sole power to try an impeachment case resides in the United States Senate. And that provision was put in the Constitution for one particular reason, so that the jury, essentially, the Senate, could be held accountable to the voters. Number two, the Constitution is relatively silent on the role of the Chief Justice, and that argues in favor of the Chief Justice deferring to the judgment of the United States Senate. Number three, in the Andrew Johnson impeachment, there is some evidence that Justice Chase decided minor evidentiary questions, but that, again, is still highly unusual and constitutionally suspect. So at the end of the day, given the temperament of Justice Roberts, I expect that at the end of the day, he will defer to the United States Senate, and I think that's a wise course of action.
I agree with you, Harry, and I would even go one step farther. Even in the very rare possibility that the Chief Justice would decide to cast a tie-breaking vote, here's what I think would happen. I think Leader McConnell would appeal that ruling, and I think at least one of the senators who initially voted to have witnesses would vote with Leader McConnell to overturn that ruling in order to defend the prerogative of the United States Senate. I really do. I think even those senators would not want to defer that authority to the Chief Justice. So I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a great question, Nancy. Look, 4 hours of debate. We're going to kick off here in about 30 minutes, and then sometime around the dinner hour, there's going to be that very important vote. They're calling it a gateway vote on whether or not to call additional witnesses. It looks like that vote will fail, and then we will begin a fairly long process, although long in terms of hours, not days, I believe, in bringing this trial to a close. And I think the American people will breathe a sigh of relief. They'll turn to the Iowa caucuses and the State of the Union next week.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. During the break, we had a brief conversation with those who are joining on Facebook and Periscope about the possibility of a bipartisan exoneration. And folks, that is what I actually think is going to happen. It doesn't have to be bipartisan. Of course, every impeachment vote prior to this one had been bipartisan. This one was not. I think this exoneration may be bipartisan. Of course, the opposition to it in the House was. But I think you can look at people like Doug Jones or Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema, or maybe even a surprise. Dianne Feinstein certainly sounded like she was on the fence earlier this week, and I think she may do that as well. I also think you might see a Democrat senator sort of split their votes, being for witnesses and against impeachment in the end, or against witnesses, additional witnesses, and then for impeachment in the end. I think that is possible. I want to go back to the phones, take one more call. Patty is calling in from Maryland on line one with a very similar question to the last caller. So I want to make sure we explain this very carefully to all of you. Patty, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much. Just a simple question. If there is a tiebreaker, can the vice president become the if there's a tie, can the vice president become a tiebreaker?
Yeah, it's a great question, Patty. And typically the answer is yes. The vice president is the president of the Senate. And when you're talking about legislation or other matters, the vice president will come down the street from the White House and cast a tie-breaking vote. But it's not so in impeachment. There's this reality that he would be conflicted out. So the Constitution lays out that the Chief Justice will be the presiding officer in matters of impeachment. It doesn't specifically say whether or not he gets a tie-breaking vote. And most of the precedent says that he doesn't. And certainly all of the precedent says that the Senate could overrule a ruling that is made by the Chief Justice. But Harry, this is a very unique constitutional situation where the president of the Senate, which is the vice president, does not sit in that chair. That's why we've been hearing from the Chief Justice throughout all these proceedings.
I think that's precisely correct. And so, pursuant to the Constitution, the vice president does have a role with respect to legislative action taken by the Senate. But the Constitution does not give the vice president a role in impeachment cases. Partly for very good reasons, I think. The vice president would be a self-interested observer if he presided over the Senate. And so it's very, very possible, for instance, depending on the relationship between the president and the vice president, in a hypothetical case, the vice president could say, well, if I could break the tie and move things forward, perhaps, so that the president could be impeached, then I could assume the office. That constitutional role is disallowed with respect to the vice president. And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court instead is inserted as the presiding officer with a very limited constitutional role. And I think this decision at the end of the day should be decided by whom? The senators themselves. They should go up to the podium, cast their vote, and then be held responsible by the American voters in November or some subsequent election. So I think at the end of the day, at the way the process is set up, the Senate gets to decide, and the senators are then held responsible to the citizens of the United States.
I couldn't agree with you more, Harry. We've heard a lot of the Chief Justice's voice, but even then, he's mainly been reading questions that were sent to the desk by United States senators. I think that's the way it should be. And you mentioned the election year. We've got some sound from Jay we're going to play about an election year. But folks, we're just 3 days away from the first caucuses in the Democrat primary. They're going to be in Iowa. Of course, four sitting members of the Senate want to be in Iowa. That's part of why I think that the trial is going to end this session day. I think they will go as long as it takes, into the night, through the night, maybe into tomorrow. But ultimately, I think this is going to come to a final vote. But either way, we're very close to the end of this trial. We're very close to President Trump being exonerated and the United States Senate returning to the business of the American people.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can't go on? Why see it your way? Run the risk of knowing.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. For those of you who are joining us on Facebook, we played a video during the break. Some conversation back and forth on the floor of the United States Senate between Manager Schiff and Jay. The question was read by the Chief Justice about the whistleblower. And, of course, we've played sound for you before of Jay sort of reminding people the context in which all of this was brought up, reminding people of the contact that the whistleblower had with Chairman Schiff's staff, possible contact with him, possible coordination. Of course, it colors all of these proceedings. And there was a fairly detailed conversation about that. I want to play for you just a couple of minutes of that conversation so you understand the point that Jay made to the Senate on this. This is going to be bite three. It's Jay responding to a question about the whistleblower.
Recent reporting described two NSC staff holdovers from the Obama administration attending an all-hands meeting of NSC staff held about 2 weeks into the Trump administration and talking loudly enough to be overheard, saying, "We need to do everything we can to take out the president." On July 26, 2019, the House Intelligence Committee hired one of those individuals, Sean Misko. The report further describes relationships between Misko, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and an individual alleged as the whistleblower. Why did your committee hire Sean Misko the day after the phone call between President Trump and Zelensky, and what role has he played throughout your committee's investigation?
There's two responses that I'd like to get to. One, with regard to the issue of witnesses, in this case, the whistleblower. Mr. Schiff put the whistleblower issue front and center with his own words during the course of their investigation. He talked about the whistleblower testifying. Retribution is what is prohibited under the statute against a whistleblower. That's what a whistleblower statute protects, that there's no retribution. In other words, they're not going to be fired for blowing the whistle. But this idea that there's complete anonymity, and I'm not saying that we should disclose the individual's name, and you handle that in executive session or any way you'd want, but we can't just say it's not a relevant inquiry to know who on the staff that conducted the primary investigation here was in communication with that whistleblower, especially after Mr. Schiff denied that he or his staff initially had even had any conversations with the whistleblower. It goes back to the whole witness issue, and I want to go to that for just 30 seconds here. It seems to me that the discussion for witnesses, I heard what Mr. Schiff said about the 30, we'll do depositions in a week. Democratic leader said I could have any witnesses I want yesterday. I've got it in the transcript. And you couldn't get all the witnesses you'd want in a week. You couldn't get the discovery done in a week. But if in fact they believe that they presented this overwhelming case that they have, they talk about subterfuge and smoke screens. The smoke screen here is that they used 13 of their 17 witnesses to try to prove their case, and we were able to use those very witnesses to undercut that case. So I think we just have to keep that in perspective.
Harry, and I thought this exchange was a very good one in articulating why Chairman Schiff, he's trying to have it both ways, because he wants to open the door to additional witnesses, ones that he did not call in the United States House. We played some sound, I believe it was yesterday from a couple of days ago, when Jay was on the floor and said, well, look, I mean, the very first witness I want to call is Manager Schiff, if we're going to go there, because he is one that had contact with the whistleblower. So, look, you just can't have it both ways, not just for partisan reasons. I mean, clearly the Democrats controlled the process in the House of Representatives, and Republicans are controlling it in the Senate. But, Harry, if you are going to open the door to witnesses, of course you're going to have witnesses called from both sides. That has never been what Chairman Schiff has been suggesting.
I think that is precisely correct. So what Adam Schiff is calling for is for the U.S. Senate to do his job. In other words, to engage in a one-sided, unfair process that deprives the President of the United States either with the right of cross-examination or the right to call his own witnesses. So the whistleblower in this particular case is clearly relevant. And who made the whistleblower and the whistleblower's testimony relevant was none other than Adam Schiff. Now he wants to hide the identity of the whistleblower because Adam Schiff has made so many misstatements about his staff's contact with the whistleblower before the whistleblower complaint was indeed filed. That's number one. Number two, Adam Schiff has made misstatements about the whistleblower statute. And so Jay did a very skillful job in tearing apart Adam Schiff's claim by simply doing what we all do in law school and as lawyers. We actually look at the text of the statute. The text of the statute protects the whistleblower from retribution. It does not protect the whistleblower's identity. So Adam Schiff, of course, doesn't want to be a witness. He will claim he's not relevant. He doesn't have any facts. Of course he has facts, or at least facts that are in possession of his staff. That's number one. And then number two, he doesn't want the whistleblower to testify because the whistleblower's testimony could indeed incriminate, if you will, Adam Schiff's staff, if not Adam Schiff himself. And I think it is clear beyond question that throughout this process, Adam Schiff has consistently lied to the American people. He said that he had more than direct evidence, for instance, that the Trump campaign had engaged in collusion. Guess what? Bob Mueller and the special counsel's investigation destroyed that claim, absolutely eviscerated that claim. Now he says he has an overwhelming case. And he's made an overwhelming case to the United States Senate. But guess what? Now we need witnesses, even though we controlled utterly the process of calling witnesses in the House of Representatives. We denied Republicans the right to call their own witnesses. We denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses. And we engaged in an unfair process. But now we want the Senate to finish our job. This makes no sense on virtually any level.
Jay said on the floor of the Senate yesterday that he would like to call Chairman Schiff in sort of a Ken Starr role where he would come and actually present his report. And he pointed out that when the Intelligence Committee went before the Judiciary Committee to present the report, Chairman Schiff didn't even attend to do that. He sent one of the attorneys. So, you know, he would like to call Chairman Schiff in that role. I think he could also be called, as you point out, Harry, as a material witness, because for questions about coordination with the whistleblower. Did you coordinate with the whistleblower to write the complaint? Did your staff coordinate with the whistleblower to write the complaint? If you're going to open the door to witnesses, Chairman Schiff is going to be on that list. I have virtually no doubt. I want to try to get a call in before the end of this segment of the show. Let's go to Megan calling from Illinois on line one with a good question. Megan, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Great. Thank you. My question goes right to what Harry was just saying about this not making sense. So, I mean, the Democrats are so devious. I wonder if they put forth these purposefully, you know, ambiguous articles and are pressing for witnesses and docs here in the Senate instead of, you know, the proper place of the House to draw this process out for as long as possible. I mean, if they do that, does that freeze regular business in the Senate and, you know, the Supreme Court? Can McConnell and Trump still put, you know, confirm judges while this is happening?
So a couple of things. First of all, let me answer the question about motive. I mean, I have believed from day one that this was never actually about removing the president. It was about undermining him. Now, would they love to remove the president? Yes, they would. But I think they've known from the beginning that that was a threshold they were never going to clear. They were never going to convince 20 Republican senators in the United States Senate to vote with him. I think this was always about undermining his presidency, trying to get it to operate under a cloud and maybe distracting from some of the things that the administration is accomplishing. But to your question about would it bog down the Supreme Court and the United States Senate? I mean, the unequivocal answer is yes. The House managers will say, well, you could still divide it up. If we were doing depositions, you could maybe put legislation on the floor in the morning and then do the impeachment trial in the afternoon once depositions were done. That's true. But remember, senators can only be in one place at one time. The Chief Justice can only be in one place at one time. He has to go do the business of the Supreme Court. You could have rescheduling issues there. The longer it drags out, the more complicating all those logistical things become. And look, it's just not necessary. You heard Harry say it a minute ago. The House manager said they have proven their case. If you have proven your case, that should be the time you want to give it to the jury, or in this case, to the United States Senate. Folks, I think that's what's going to happen. Around the dinner hour, I believe they're going to vote against additional witnesses, and very, very soon, this trial is going to come to a close.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are just about 10 minutes away from what I think will be the final day of this impeachment trial, final session day. I think we will move to a final vote maybe in the wee hours of the morning tomorrow, maybe even into tomorrow, but I don't think they're going to fully adjourn for the day until this trial is over. I could be wrong. There's a lot of variables out there, a lot of parliamentary tricks available, maybe not even tricks, just procedures available to Leader Schumer. If he can convince Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren that they don't need to be in Iowa for the caucuses that begin on Monday, maybe we'll be here longer. But I think it will end today. We'll see. I do want to play one more piece of sound from Jay for you in just a moment. It's something that I think is important for you to hear. But I want to first go to Bill. He's been holding on line two, calling in from Oklahoma. Bill, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm still a little confused. I understand that the vice president cannot set as the deciding vote if it's 50-50 on the more evidence. How will that be handled?
Yeah, well, it's not 100% certain how a 50-50 vote would be handled. I think there's most expectation on both sides of the aisle that the Chief Justice would decline to make a ruling, and therefore it would fail. In the United States Senate, if a measure does not pass, it by definition fails. Now, typically, that's the role of the vice president to cast a tie-breaking vote, but most expect that the Chief Justice would not weigh in. And just one other piece of evidence that I think is relevant for why he might not. I think he knows that first of all, I don't think he wants to be a participant in a political process, a process that the Constitution intentionally made political to be decided by the voters. But I think he also knows that if he were to weigh in and make a ruling during a tie vote, I think he knows the Senate would overrule him. And I really do expect that would happen. I think the United States Senate would defend their rights under Article 1 of the Constitution, specifically Article 1, Section 5, about setting their own rules, making their own decisions. Article 1, Section 3 gives them the power to impeach, but Article 1, Section 5 says they set their own rules. And I think even a Republican senator who voted for witnesses and the Chief Justice ruled in favor of, I think that senator would flip their vote to defend the authority of the United States Senate. That's a very long way, Bill, of saying that I don't think the Chief Justice will weigh in. If it's a 50-50 vote, if Senator Murkowski decides that she's going to vote for witnesses and the Chief Justice tries to break that tie, I don't think he's going to do it, but I think the Senate would overturn them. Folks, I want to play one more piece of sound for you before we close the broadcast today, because I think this is an issue that was also important to be addressed yesterday on the floor of the Senate. There's been all of this discussion about calling additional witnesses, and a question was asked of Jay whether or not any of the additional witnesses that could be called would have firsthand knowledge. And I wanted you to hear his response. This is Jay Sekulow on the floor of the Senate, bite number 7.
Mr. Sekulow said earlier that the president's counsel would expect to call their own witnesses in this trial if Mr. Bolton or others are called by the House managers. Can you tell the Senate if any of those witnesses would have firsthand knowledge of the charges against the president and his actions?
Besides the fact that Mr. Schumer said, and it's on page 675 of the transcript, that we could call any witnesses we want, Mr. Schiff just said we can call their witnesses. And that's what he said, you can call their witnesses, because under their theory, if we wanted to talk to the whistleblower, even in a secure setting, to find out if he in fact may have worked for the vice president, or may have worked on Ukraine, or may have been in communication with the staff, that's irrelevant. We can't talk to Joe Biden or Hunter Biden because that's irrelevant, except the conversation that is the subject matter of this inquiry, the phone call transcript that you selectively utilize, has a reference to Hunter Biden. The conversation with Burisma, they raised it for about a half a day, saying there was nothing there. Well, let me find out through cross-examination. But I just think the irony of this before we go to dinner, that we could call anyone we want except the witnesses we want, but we can call their witnesses that they want. Remember we said the fruit of the poisonous tree? It's still the fruit of the poisonous tree. It doesn't get better with age, as I said. But this idea that this is going to be a fair process, call the witnesses they want. Don't call the witnesses you want because they're irrelevant. Maybe irrelevant to them. They are not irrelevant to the president. And they're not irrelevant to our case.
Harry, this question of relevancy is one that Chairman Schiff has routinely tried to jump in and say he gets to decide. This is something that witness is not relevant to this case. Well, Harry, anytime you have an adversarial proceeding like this, both sides get to determine what is relevant. And by the way, when the House managers asserted the Biden and Burisma issue for a long period of time during their case, they acknowledge that even they know it's relevant to this case. So if you open up the door for witnesses, Jay's absolutely right. Of course, the president gets to participate alongside the House managers and determining which witnesses are relevant to their side.
Yes, I think, again, their approach to witnesses underscores their complete and unmistakable incoherence. So from their perspective, even though they've talked endlessly about Burisma and Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, Burisma is off the table. Joe Biden is off the table as a witness. Hunter Biden is off the table as a witness. The whistleblower is off the table as a witness. Adam Schiff's staff's interaction with the whistleblower before he filed the complaint, that's off the table. So essentially, they're telling Jay and the president's legal team, you can call any witness you want. As Jay rightly said, so long as we approve of those witnesses. So what the Democrats really want to do is to continue their one-sided approach to impeachment. And I don't think the United States Senate, which has the sole power to try the case, should allow Adam Schiff to get away with this. Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, Nancy Pelosi, they have made a plethora of mistakes in this particular case. Number one, the case was rushed. Number two, the case was one-sided. Number three, they prevented the President of the United States from cross-examining witnesses and calling his own witnesses. And now, at the end of the day, they want new witnesses. Why? Because their own case, although it's urgent, although it's overwhelming, is actually, at the end of the day, it's cratering right in front of their own eyes. They know it. The American people, I believe, know it. And I think the United States Senate should end it.
I agree with you, Harry. We're just a couple of minutes away from the United States Senate beginning what I believe will be the final day of this impeachment trial. Jay and Jordan have repeatedly asked me to pass along to you that they are grateful for your thoughts and prayers. I see Joseph on Facebook says Jay and the team have done an excellent job. I agree. Been proud of them as they have worked around the clock on this effort. It's about more than just this president, folks. It's about the presidency in general. It's about the careful balance of powers that our founders set forward. And ultimately, it's about defending your vote. Is there a mechanism in the Constitution to impeach? Yes, there is. Is that threshold very, very high? Yes, it is. Has it been met? In my opinion, clearly no. And your right to have a vote and pick your leaders, unless that very high threshold is met, must be defended. Folks, I think this is the last session day. 4 hours of debate. I think they will decline to call additional witnesses, and then eventually they will move to a close and the president will be exonerated. We'll talk to you next week.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.